The log was in the fireplace, all spiced and set to burn. At last, the yearly Christmas race was in the clubhouse turn. The cards were in the mail, the gifts beneath the tree, and 30 days reprieve till Visa could catch up with me. And though smug satisfaction seemed the order of the day, something still was nagging me and wouldn't go away. A week before, I got a letter from my old great aunt. It read, "Of course I'll understand completely if you can't, but if you find you have some time, how wonderful if we could sit and have a little chat, share a cup of Christmas tea." She'd had a mild stroke that year, which crippled her left side. Though housebound now, my folks had said, it hadn't hurt her pride. They said, "She'd love to see you. What a nice thing it would be for you to go and maybe have a cup of Christmas tea." But boy, I didn't want to go. Oh, what a bitter pill to see an old relation and how far she'd gone downhill. I remember her as vigorous, as funny, and as bright. I remember Christmas Eves when she regaled us half the night. I didn't want to risk all that. I didn't want the pain. I didn't need to be depressed, and I didn't need the strain. What about my brother? Why not him? She's his aunt, too. I thought I had it justified, but then before I knew the reasons not to go that I so painstakingly had built were cracking wide and crumbling in an acid rain of guilt. I put on boots and gloves and cap, shame stinging every pore, and armed with squeegee, sand, and map, I went out my front door. I drove in from the suburbs to the older part of town. The pastels of the newer homes gave way to gray and brown. I had that disembodied feeling as the car pulled up and stopped beside the wooden house that held the Christmas cup. How I got up to the door, I really couldn't tell. I watched my hand rise up and press the button of the bell. I waited, aided by my nervous rocking to and fro, and just as I was thinking I should turn around and go, I heard the rattle of the china in the hutch against the wall. The triple beat, 2 feet, and a crutch came down the hall. The clicking of the door latch and the sliding of the bolt and a little swollen struggle popped it open with a jolt. She stood there pale and tiny, looking fragile as an egg. I forced myself from staring at the brace that held her leg. And though her thick bifocals seemed to crack and spread her eyes, their milky and refracted depths lit up with young surprise. "Come in, come in!" She laughed the word. She took me by the hand, and all my fears dissolved away as if by her command. We went inside, and then, before I knew how to react, before my eyes and ears and nose, was Christmas past, alive, intact. The scent of candied oranges, of cinnamon and pine, the antique wooden soldiers in the military line, the porcelain nativity I'd always loved so much, the Dresden and the crystal I'd been told I mustn't touch. My spirit fairly bolted like a child out of class, and danced among the ornaments of calico and glass. Like magic, I was six again, deep in a Christmas spell, steeped in the million memories the boy inside knew well. And here among old Christmas cards so lovingly displayed, a special place of honor for the ones us kids had made. And there beside her rocking chair, the center of it all, my great aunt stood and said how nice it was I'd come to call. I sat and rattled on about the weather and the flu, and she listened very patiently, and she smiled and said, "What's new?" Thoughts and words began to flow. I started making sense. I lost that